Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24 month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint. It is Tuesday, the 25th of March. You're listening to Viewpoint Talk Radio, its current affairs show. With invited guests, we're discussing the issues of the day. On today's show, we'll be looking at the front pages of the papers, asking, do we think, with the crackdowns happening in Turkey at the moment, do we think that democracy has had its day? Look at the UK situation and whatever else we want to throw into the mix today. If you've got a particular viewpoint or something you want us to tackle, then these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
But first off, let's have a look at the front pages of the papers, what's making the headlines this morning. The Times says the governor of the Bank of England has dealt a blow to Labour's hopes of economic growth. The paper reports that Andrew Bailey leaves a lecture at Leicester University to warn about the strong headwinds of US tariffs and an aging population. But the Times also says he struck an optimistic note about the potential of artificial intelligence to transform Britain's economic prospects. Financial Times leads with Donald Trump's threat to impose 25% tariffs on all imports from countries that buy oil from Venezuela. He's accused the South American country of sending thousands of criminals undercover to the US. FT says the tariffs risk creating turmoil on the oil market and could sharply rise levies on goods from Venezuela's biggest customers, including Canada and India. Metro's front page shows an injured Ukrainian woman after a Russian missile attack with the headline Putin's brutal peace offering. Daily Express devotes its front page to a message to the US president from its correspondent in Kyiv. Mr. Trump, wake up, it says, adding that Ukrainians are the victims. Main story for The Guardian is a warning from police that domestic abusers are driving a growing number of victims to suicide. The latest official report reveals that such deaths have outnumbered cases of people killed by their partners for the second year in a row. The paper reports that police have admitted to past mistakes and pledged to investigate more hidden cases of violence against women. The Daily Telegraph reveals that the Honours Forfeiture Committee threatened to strip the wealthy Reform UK supporter Charlie Mullins of his OBE last September because of social media comments and offensive jokes dating back to 2022. In one, Mr. Mullins said that someone should kill Mayor of London Sadiq Khan. The businessman's lawyers promised that he would undertake diversity training, and he has now been told he can keep the OBE. Mr. Mullins tells the Telegraph he's the victim of a politically motivated attack. The government has not responded. Finally, the Times highlights research suggesting that using a cheap microphone in video conferencing can cost you desirability, hireability, and credibility. That's an awful lot of abilities. The study at Yale University found that when a recording is of higher quality, listeners tend to judge the speaker as a higher quality too. By contrast, contributors on a tinny microphone are less compelling. Yeah, all right. Everybody start laughing about the quality of my microphone. Right then, the headlines then. Metro, Putin's brutal peace offering. The Express, Mr. Trump, wake up. Ukrainians are the victims. The Times, bank adds to growing pains for Chancellor. The I, future of state pension triple lock questioned by Labour MPs. The Daily Mail, Labour to block bid to ban solar panels made by slaves. So Malik Miliband can put them on schools and hospitals, and they're having a crack at Rachel Reeves as well. More freebies. Guardian, domestic abusers driving more victims to suicide, warn police. And there's also a picture of Gérard Depardieu on the front. He is in court on several sexual assault charges. The Daily Telegraph, a picture of Charlie Mullins on the front page. Threat to take reform donors OBE ignites free speech row. Financial Times, Trump threatens countries that buy Venezuelan oil with a 25% import tariff. The Mirror, exclusive arena bomb legacy. This victory is for my Martin. This is the mother of Fegan Murray. This is the mother of her name is Fegan Murray. She is the mother of Martin, who was killed in the 2017 bombing. She hailed the bill passed in the House of Commons as a victory for her son. It's due to become law, anti-terror laws to make venues safer. The Sun has accused the Duchess of Sussex of exploiting her children on putting them on a social media picture, promoting her online clothes shop. Meghan Markle's promotional efforts have been described as tacky and desperate by one expert quoted in the paper. Tacky and desperate is not a word that I would use to the other woman on the front page of The Sun, who is Ava Longoria, who turns 50 and has been celebrating it in Marbella. Yes, indeed, Ava. Anyway, and finally, the Daily Star. The Daily Star goes with TV presenter Alan Titchmarsh, his criticism of a fictional garden in the TV game show Grantchester. According to the paper, Titch's hysteria involved him accusing the ITV drama of driving me nuts with the appearance of blooming flowers outside the vicar's cottage, accusing it of looking awful and fake. So there you go. Slug-hating North Korean enemy of the state, believe it or not, Alan Titchmarsh hits out at TV crime show, and here we go. Titch's hysteria. And those, for better, worse, or slug-hating North Korean idols, are your headlines on this Tuesday, the 25th of March.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
So, and thank you very much. Quick off the mark already, who are saying that the Yale have obviously been listening to Viewpoint, it seems. Yes, there you go. If democracy has had its day, what is the alternative? Yes, indeed. What is indeed the alternative? One man who might be able to tell us the answer to that is my guest on today's show. Good morning to you, Alf.
Good morning, Giles.
So,
what's the alternative to
democracy?
Democracy.
Strong leadership.
Communism.
It's
called communism, which is...
It's not called communism.
Dictatorship.
You could have authoritarianism.
Dictatorship.
Divine right of kings.
Oh, it's still dictatorship.
They're all dictators, aren't they? Authoritarianists.
Authoritarianism.
Yeah, is dictatorship.
That's called dictatorship. They're all dictators. So the alternative to democracy, where you pretend to allow the people to be involved in decision making, is dictatorship.
Some might argue that's what happens anyway.
I just said that. Well, you can pretend that you allow people to have a say in their own futures, which is rare.
Indeed. As Paul Weller once sang in The Jam, the world is your oyster, but your future's a clam. It's got you in its grip before you're born.
That's because you're a music man.
No, this is true, yeah. That's from The Jam, when you were young, by the way.
I just can't get this picture out of my head now of the whole history.
Mel Brooks'
shrunk into like 15 minutes of Charlie Mullins' life. I just can't believe.
I mean, he's been a guest on this show. He's been
with me,
friend. With you,
he was on Viewpoint with
was
me.
He really?
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got a better memory I have.
And that must have been the early days for you.
Must have been, because I can't remember it.
He was living because he didn't have his.
You're right.
Didn't have his villa.
Something just clicked in there. You see,
he just drove down from wherever he was staying. And he sat next to me, and I said, it must have been you, because it wasn't Richard. And I said to you, after about 20 minutes, I said, this geezer's had a drink, hasn't he? Well, I didn't use the long words, I used the little word. And you went, yeah, he's it's 5 o'clock this morning, he was still on the beer. He was...
That wasn't me.
Well, then it was... No, you weren't. He was.
No, I would have, yeah, but I wouldn't have... I mean,
I'll tell you what the reason was. Exactly what you just said, because the radio station loved him to bits.
Right.
And they were trying to get his advertising.
Right there, moving swiftly onwards. This coming...
Marbella Plumbing.
Plumbing, right.
That's what he set up, Marbella Plumbing, 2 vans.
Anyway, moving swiftly onwards, if I may. Blimey. Anarchism or cooperatives? Here you go. There's some ideas to if you don't have democracy and you don't have dictatorships, you can have anarchism or you can have a cooperative.
Well, anarchism is a form of dictatorship in its own way. It's,
well, how can I... Well, anarchism, but surely anarchism...
Well, because when...
Show me where I'm
wrong. Because when the anarchists get into power...
Yes.
They make no decisions.
Right. So how's that...
So, yeah. Well, so effectively, you let society run itself, and there is no way that a society of, you know, trillions of different thoughts and ideas can ever run itself. So what always happens is a strong personality rises to the top and sort of starts to lead it. They pretend they're anarchists, and we're not going to make a decision, but they really are. They're doing it in a subversive way. And if you talk about cooperatives, the best sort of cooperatives were the kibbutz in Israel.
Yep.
Which was... technically, the truest form of democracy probably in the world, because they were certainly anti-communist, and they certainly had an involvement where they would all sit down. But still, from all of that, is, you know, human nature always shows you that somebody always rises above others and ends up being a leader. So there's these days, modern days, you have the leader of a kibbutz.
The gentleman,
who
owned a huge slice of land on which my old place used to be, the cathedral.
Yeah, yeah.
He was an anarchist in the '70s, and he with his mates had squats, and they were in Docklands, right, Burrell's Wharf, etc. Before it
was Docklands.
Yeah, right. And he was the handyman. He was the guy who needed to fix stuff.
Right.
So whilst everybody else was going about, you know, Maoist and the whole bit, and, you know, take it to the man and the whole situation and free love and whatever, he was making sure the plumbing worked and the lights were thin, because he knew how to do that.
And leading the way, presumably.
And about, he said to me, because he said, Giles, and he's a brilliant guy. He's in his 70s, taekwondo expert, lives in Stockholm, multi-millionaire, 30-year-old Swedish life, living here. And he said to me, he said two things. He said, one of these, it was all very well, this free love and whatever, but at the end of the day, he said, I suddenly realised that I wasn't getting anywhere with this sort of thing. So he then took that skill set, and he built Burrell's Wharf. And the rest, as they say, is history. And he also said to me, you know, I'd because I was living there off grid on the cathedral on the lake, and he said, I'd love to swap, you know, I'd love to have your life. And it's like, I will swap you, trust me on this one. Just give me keys, yes, and I'm off to Stockholm. So yeah, there you go.
Freedom of the road is one thing, freedom of life is something different.
9527J4. Oh, the Tower of the Tower of Brewer on a Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Morning. Already we've got comments coming in. Morning, Gary. Liz has come in already to say, the Baroness of Brighton, good morning to you. She says, Hi, Giles. Just learnt last night that the USA is an importer of Venezuelan oil. How does that work in retaliation to his latest tariffs? Indeed. Meanwhile, other points coming in. you had the Poundland Rod Stewart on Viewpoint. Anarchists and cooperatives. Mullins was introduced to the show. Who had guests on who knew what they were talking about. Thank you very much indeed for that. Nightmare. But what we're asking today... on the poll, I won't say the poll of polls, because, but I just did. Anyway, on today's show, On today's poll, which is on the Facebook page, which is Talk Radio Europe Official, I'm asking the question, what's been happening in Turkey in the past week? Do we think that's doomed? With the crackdown in Turkey, are democracy's days numbered? You've got yes, no, and don't know. And at the moment, yes is 100%. So get involved with that, or if you want to get involved with the show anyway. But let us know your viewpoint on the fact that do we think democracy's days are numbered with the crackdown in Turkey? It's interesting, isn't it?
It's not Turkey, though, is it? This is happening everywhere. Like Trump gets in power and all of a sudden everybody's talking about Trump president for life. Putin president for life.
Well, Putin got through and then
Erdogan now president for life. You know, and they're all gradually going through this fight. And how do you sustain democracy if the people who you're supposed to be representing have turned their back on it? You know, the UK election results, if that's not fair warning to the UK, because all you need to come out of that, and let's put it in a way that people might quite not understand. The guy who's the leader and the owner of Respect could be the next big person in the UK. And what's the betting that he doesn't try to turn the UK into not a dictatorship?
You mean reform, not Respect?
Whatever they're called. Whatever they're called.
You mean Tice?
Reform. No, I mean,
what's his Farage?
Farage is the pinnacle bloke.
Yeah.
And it's called, where is he heading? So he got fed up with the fact that all these people who were in a political party could tell him what to do. So he bought the party, as they say. Now it's what's on the tin is what you get. And then he pretends that a year later or 18 months later, because you're looking at the next election, and the only way to win an election in the UK at the moment still, because it's a democracy, is to turn your political party into a party, a pretend political party, into a real democratic party. So he then says, we've got to turn reform into a democratic organisation. And you go, you got away from that because you hated UKIP, because of what they did to you. You hated, you know, every other facet of wherever it's come, because these people, for you, Farage, don't know what they're talking about, tried to tell you what to do. So Farage wants to lead the way. He's no more and no less a dictator than the next person in that organisation.
The thing with these authoritarianist leaders is the fact that, you know, Erdogan got in, what, 20 years ago in Turkey as former mayor of Istanbul. He was, I think he was a teacher before he was...
Don't know.
Anyway.
Too long ago.
But he's been there for a very long time.
Yeah.
He was very much pro women's right, you know, when Ataturk set up Turkey in 1910, whatever it is, it was very much through the Industrial Revolution.
Multi-faith culture,
votes for women before the UK, everything like that. And then we've seen, you know, as their hold on power goes on, they become more despotic, and they go back and they cling to the things that they were against. So he is Erdogan's shut down all schools that aren't Islamic. He is...
That's because the voting population now is... There's more Muslims than there are Christians.
So well, it's not only that, it's the fact...
It's swayed.
Yeah.
And they're the people... No different to the UK. If the Jewish population really got involved in elections in the UK, you know, they would create the real leadership in the country. But lots of Jews, certainly Chinese in the UK, very rarely, and I'm talking about traditional Chinese, very rarely involve themselves in politics. They keep themselves to themselves.
We were having this conversation last week about the fact that, you know, Ron was saying, you know, the fact that, you know, there were the number of people who don't get involved with the voting process and then complain or are shocked when a candidate gets in who they think is more extreme. But surely, Alf, and after your experience of the political world, you know that if the people who will turn out on a wet Wednesday and vote are the people who are absolutely committed to voting, and rather than the naysayers, and I'm not quite sure, and it'll be fine, and I'll get in.
You can't, it's always generalisation when it comes to elections, but the facts are, people, I said this before on the radio, and somebody tries to challenge it. You can go to wherever it's called, Salisbury House, Shaftesbury House, whatever it's called, right. Somerset House, and you can get all the voting records, and you just look at, there's two things you can look at. One is the number of people who don't vote, and then you can look at the date that they entered the electoral register. Because they're still going to be on the electoral register even if they don't vote, because it's the law in the UK. Yes, there's going to be some that ain't on there because they're avoiding and whatever. But in the main, you just go there and you go, people under the age of 35, how many, what percentage of those vote compared to people over the age of 35? And every election, that age gets higher. So the next election, it will be, you know, maybe under 40s. This huge number of under 40s won't vote. It's not because they can't be bothered to go and vote. It's because they've been switched off from politics that, in the main, they don't see either involves them or does them any benefit. And then what you end up with is you end up with the government that you don't want. I'm not saying, you know, anything about the current Labour government, but you don't end up with a Labour government with, Christ knows, massive majority on the back of a party that polled 1% less than it did when they lost the election. Because that's the reality. You know, 1% people voted less for Labour than they did at the last general election. And they get this massive great... And you go, oh, I wonder why that is. Well, it's because the Tories weren't trusted. So huge numbers of people didn't vote. We had reform coming along, taking away, you know, the extremities of the Tories. You've still got, you know, the Lib Dems will always be popping around on the edge, taking votes for those people who just say, I don't like Labour and I don't like the Tories. Yeah. And sticking, forgetting the SNP for a moment, they're important in Scotland but not in England. And let's face it, England is what elects the Parliament. And you just wonder how people are being driven away from all of that. Well, they're driven away because what is there in it for them? What, you know, I get involved in politics and I end up... I mean, I never thought, when I was growing up, we had help for the poor. Nowadays, you've got a food bank. You know, it's just like getting the replacement for London pubs, a pub on every corner. You've got a food bank on every corner. You know, free. We have to talk in the UK, in England, about giving free school meals, irrespective of whether you can afford it or not, free school meals. Now, you know, this latest, because they've got to make the cutbacks, there's now talk that they're not going to give free school dinners, not the breakfast. They're starting the breakfast clubs, they'll deal with that. But free school dinners are now going to be, could be, they're saying it's not true, but somebody somewhere put it on the table, some civil service body put it on the table for discussion. You're now going to have free school dinners will be means tested. As if they've never been means tested. Well, it's just nonsense.
This is the thing that Marcus Rashford was going on about sort of 5 years ago, wasn't it? Like, this is the whole point. And, you know, free. I mean, for many people, you know, for many children,
it's the only
meal they get. That can be the only meal they get. And we know the information is out there that if you don't eat, if you don't give your, you know, children nutrition, that's when you get a rise of it. And I was talking to, you know, I was interviewing somebody at the end of last week about, you know, people who are being labelled as having special needs, ADHD, disability, obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, all these sort of things. And you know, and they you know, it, it, we know that children will not be able to focus if they haven't got the right amount of calories in their systems.
And they don't concentrate, and they don't learn, and they don't improve, and the country doesn't improve, and we don't create people who have got mental intelligence to be, you know, to go on to become doctors and surgeons and bloody scientists and, you know, whatever. Engineers, senior engineers, you know, you gradually destroy the country that you're in. I find it difficult to believe. Since, I mean, I've been in Spain now for getting off 20 years. Mm-hmm. But you go back and it's like, well, I never ever thought I would be looking at England saying, we can't afford to feed the kids. There's more children in child poverty than there's ever been. We can't afford this, we can't afford that. We can't deal with the asylum seekers properly. How many millions was it? 3 million people who are out of work and can't work and whatever.
Yeah.
And you just go, the whole system, whether Labour can change it, and they certainly can't change it in one parliament, you know, even if the Tories had carried on in power, even if they had made all their so-called promised changes, it would never have happened. The country needs another whole, you know, more than 10 years probably, certainly two parliamentary terms, four parliamentary terms, not just, you know, two lots of 3 year terms and things like that, you know, where the Tories were bouncing about after Cameron and Theresa May and Theresa May again and Boris, you know, Johnson, and you just go, it's Rishi Sunak, and you go, seven prime ministers in 14 years or whatever it was, or six prime ministers in 14. That never used to happen, did it? I mean, Thatcher was in there for a lifetime. Even Major afterwards, although he lost an election, was still there for a long time.
Well, he said 97.
He lost there. In 97.
Yeah, he was there till 97. That's the system. Yeah, he was there from 1990.
He was there for
7 years. 1990 Thatcher went, didn't she? 1990-91.
Yeah.
Yeah. So therefore.
And Major came in and won the 92 general election, exactly, for the Tories. Yeah. But so, and you don't see that now. It's every 10 minutes there's a change. Every, you know, they're slagging off what's happening now. And unfortunately, the Labour Party had a good platform to start on. You know, we've got a 22 million, you know, black hole, and the Tories say that's a load of lies, and, you know, the OBR says this and the OBR says that, and everybody's, and the OBR have now said that they never said that. Office for Budget Responsibility. But there's three or four other of these quangos that sit there and pontificate about what others have done, who are all saying similar things. You know, it's not good. And you just go, so when are they going to create the quango that says, how long is it going to take the UK to dig itself out of the mess that it put itself in? And I'm not just blaming 14 years of the Tories, because it started before then.
Yeah, well,
it started at the end of Blair, before Brown took over. They should never, ever have gone from Blair to Brown as a sovereign handover with no election.
But that was part of the deal. That was the part of the deal in the restaurant.
It may have been part of their deal, but yeah. I was part of the Labour Party that was saying at the time, we shouldn't have a leader who's not been elected by the country. That's party members. The problem is, when you have a system, you're never beating the individual, you're never beating the argument. How do you beat the system? And the system is the hardest part to ever crack or beat.
You
know, any government
from inside.
Don't be outside the greenhouse if you want to change the system. You have to be inside the greenhouse throwing stones rather than outside trying to break, you know, shatterproof windows. So if you're not on the inside, so I never ever left the Labour Party, even though I disagreed with lots of the things they were doing. And at the end of the day, it's like you're supporting an organisation, and we all do the same. I agree with this organisation for 80% of what they do, and I disagree with it for 20%. You know, what Pessoa did, what Sanchez did, and I've said it when Andreas has been on the show, what he did in order to retain power was wrong. But you're still going to have them, if you're a socialist in Spain, you're still going to have them, you're still going to have Pessoa more than you're going to have the PP. And even the population, again, the latest polling isn't showing some massive swing to PP. It's showing a massive swing away from left-wing parties. The forecast is that Pessoa would lose five seats.
New opinion poll suggests Partido Popular would win more seats
than all the others put together.
Yeah.
But Pessoa would only lose about five seats. This is the complication. It's the other left-wing bodies who would lose seats, and also a little bit is the decline of Vox. What the PP don't want is to have to form a government in conjunction with Vox. So they're looking to do it on their own. So where they are in the polls is very strong for, you know, we're going to have a PP leadership and they're going to have it. But they only have about a three-seat majority or four-seat majority. I don't know how the Spanish Parliament works. If it was a three-seat majority in the Houses of Parliament, effectively you've got a hung government. You'd never make a decision.
952-788-4000 is the phone number. Going to the poll, be running through the show. Do we think democracy is under threat? 80% now say yes, 10% say no, and 10% don't know. To the WhatsApp and etc. that we go. What about the welfare cuts, Alf? What do you think about those?
Oh,
okay, thanks for that.
Well, it's extremely, extremely because it becomes so emotional because it's all based on the people you know who are the ones usually who are genuinely ill, genuinely struggle, genuinely. But we will all know, I mean, even going back to when I was a kid, you all knew the people who lived on the street who you knew. You know, swinging the lead, as we used to call it. We had a family who lived over the back of us, and they were richer than probably most of them.
I remember going to, when I was living in Brixton, going down to, you know, when I was signing on, and there were guys there, and this is pre-internet, so remember bike couriers everywhere in London, and there were guys in cycling outfits, with bikes outside.
Absolutely.
If you're looking for a job, can't find any work, getting on the bike and doing the big heavy walkie-talkie.
Not only that, people at the back of us, the guy... I won't mention their name because they're part of a huge East London family.
Right. Oh, yeah. Morning.
he couldn't read and write. His wife used to do all the correspondence, but they'd be down to the housing office. They had an house like I lived in, a three-bedroom townhouse. But they then put up, you know, like farmyard gates across the front drive, and they had a field in Upminster where they kept their horses and stables. And every day he would go out in his open back van collecting scrap.
Yeah.
So he was a scrap man, and he had more money than we would ever
than God
had.
On gyro days, the saying goes.
Oh, yeah, but because he couldn't read and write, he got every benefit going, and you go, but they didn't deserve the benefits. But two doors along, the family that struggled, really struggled, had to go on bended knees to get some sort of benefit, never as much as what they
got,
because they didn't know how to work the system.
Exactly, that's the thing. We're how to game the system, that's the thing. Yeah. And we are, you know you're going to see, we saw this enough, and it turns out every time you open up the Express, it was going about for farmers losing, you know, being forced out of their land because of this, the £1 million thing on the heritage sector. Then there's always somebody who's got the winter fuel allowance, and you know what we had here with winter fuel allowance, and people will get
I used to get it.
But there's this perception of anybody who lives in southern Spain, or in Spain in particular, is having another gin and tonic whilst, you know, polishing their Ferrari and deciding whether to take the yacht out for the day.
Well, that's only on every other day.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Then you take the Aston Martin out. But it's that perception. It's that perception, and we make generalizations, right? So
and people believe
and
it.
People believe it. So, absolutely. You know, that whole situation. They don't know the half realities.
Whoever it was who sent a message in about America using Venezuelan oil.
Yeah,
and well, you have to question it. It's a bit like, you know, America uses British steel, but it's specialised steel. They don't make the steel that they buy from the UK in America.
Do we send them aluminium?
Aluminium.
Aluminium.
They can't even say
that. You can have it if you pronounce it. How's that?
Go on. The big thing on the news about that as well is that Spain...
Yeah.
Have the highest imports of oil is from Venezuela.
Of course it is. Because huge. Repsol's massive in
well, and you also go, well, it's because they're Spanish speakers as well. They're part of Spanish heritage. It's Repsol and it's... What would you expect, Trump? That, you know, you're going to... This is like...
Trump's got Venezuela in his crosshairs.
Well, of
it's because, you know, after 300...
After Mexico.
Well, yeah, no, but, you know...
Canada.
But
Greenland.
I mean, Mexico's a little bit more difficult for him, I think, to have a proper crack at because of the relationship they've had. But with Venezuela, because it was Chavez for decades, yeah. And it is... It's another dictatorship. It's much easier to round up a bunch of Venezuelans, 200 something, and send them to a prison in El Salvador.
Yeah.
You know, run by another right wing dictator this time round. And you know, there was a mother the other day on the news who her son was a barber who'd gone to the States, and because he's got tattoos, they've just gone, vroom, oh well, you've got tattoos, you're Venezuelan.
Yeah.
You know, it would be bad enough to be sent back to Venezuela to end up in this 40,000 other convicts in this high security prison. Mm-hmm. If that's not an abuse of human rights, I don't know what it is, Alf.
Because Trump says things, yeah. and then afterwards people have to either correct him or he has to correct him. So he goes after Canada and says this because you let all these the drugs in the what do we call it, drugs? You'd flood our country with all the drugs, so we're going to take all these things again. And you go, really? That's not true. Never was true. Never has been true. And Canada have got massive restrictions.
Canada's, you know, the fentanyl smuggling gangs of Canada.
And you go, so he's got to then stop having a go at Canada. He's already done enough damage to them, so he's got to turn away from them. I'm not sure what the ex-Bank of England geezer is going to do to upset the USA other than tell them to naff off. And the best bloke...
Is that an official economic policy?
Yeah, yeah.
Naff off.
Oh,
all right, fair enough.
Well, no, it's not actually, is it? Because Denmark, the guy from Denmark...
I'm going to take a break because I haven't taken an advert break yet, and then we'll be back after this.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
And thanks to St. James Global clients for supporting this programme. Joined in the studio by Alf Brewer. If you want to get your viewpoint across, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And some of the viewpoints coming in on the WhatsApp, which is +34 645 99 67 95. It's not the... people who don't vote have no right to complain, so who cares what they think? It's not the government's... Another one. It's not the government's role, surely, to feed a child when it is the only meal they get. We have failed towards a country that has a population that expects handouts, hence the burden of benefits, and the UK failing to return to pre-pandemic wages and benefit claims. Spain doesn't get its all from Venezuela, not even in the top five. It's 11th as an export market for Venezuela. Only 2.3% of Spanish oil comes from Venezuela. Meanwhile, a lot of these problems would be solved if we went back into the EU, of course. There's 0% PIP fraud, Alf, which is what's been cut. This is the medical, PIP. I'm not talking about normal benefits. The current government seems to think that PIP is an out-of-work benefit. Between this and the assisted dying bill, I've had it with this Labour government, and my family's always been Labour. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, has Labour become more centrist? I mean, you look at some of the policies that, you know, Reeves is bringing in, and they're going, oh, this isn't the Labour Party traditionally. But you can argue that everything, I mean, politics evolves. I mean, if you had a time machine and you went back 100 years to the Conservative Party, you'd be thinking, gosh, why aren't the Liberals doing so? What happened to the Whigs? Why are the Liberals doing so
worse,
well?
Yeah.
What?
They were even worse.
Those South Welsh miners, let's get Miss Nipes to church.
The claim... the claim about Labour isn't that they've become centrist. The claim is that they've lost their values, they've lost their core values. And you go, the problem is, if you take your core values, and your core values are to build more houses, more affordable houses, not houses for the rich, to build more affordable houses, to have your education system where every child can get the same level of education in buildings that are proper for use, that you've got a health service that is free at the point of entry for all sorts of, and we, even today they claim, but there's no real dental stuff, there's lots of stuff that the NHS doesn't really provide. But if you've got a real problem, you can get it on the NHS. So if you want to try and do all of those and have an infrastructure that's worthy, like no potholes on the roads, which damages vehicles, there's a whole pile of things that you go, these are our values. Unfortunately, we ain't got no money.
Potholes in the roads, they don't know the meaning of them. Have you seen what the roads are like out there at the moment?
Yeah, but it's the Spanish all for it.
I tell you.
And before people correct me on this, it's not me. I don't make this stuff
Somebody
up.
On a mountain bike in front of me went down the other day and it took me 5 hours to stop laughing.
The Venezuelan oil conversation was because it was on the radio. It was on Spanish radio, and they said that Trump was having a go about it, and it would affect Spain because Spain have a huge huge import of Venezuelan oil. And they said on the radio, not me, that Venezuela was the country where Spain was the biggest importer of oil from. So if it's titchy little stuff like that, somebody get hold of the news people and tell them that they've got it all wrong.
Here's the thing.
And this is where I believe what Jamie says. Don't always believe the mass media because they lie to
mainstream. Legacy media.
Whatever it is.
Here we are. This one from Claudia in Nerka. Morning to you. Good morning, Giles. Good morning, Claudia. I'm just thinking, did we ever in history have a woman dictator? I'm thinking Eva Perón.
No, she wasn't a dictator.
Perón was a dictator, wasn't
she? Perón was. Was she ever president?
No, but she was president.
Shadow president. She used to tell him what to do and he did it.
Boudicca?
I don't.
Boudicca?
Yeah, you'd have to go Boudicca, yeah. From Essex.
Justine and Constant,
I don't remember. I mean, there's been some pretty hefty.
I can hear the anti-Thatcher crowd going. Well, she was.
I was thinking of Gandhi in India.
Gandhi. Is it quote unquote a functioning democracy in the 70s and 80s? Perhaps.
Yeah, but and didn't Pakistan around the same time? Before him there was a woman. Bangladesh. The Bangladesh when they split.
We're not looking for these are not sort of heavyweight dictators.
The only one.
Imelda Marcos, for example.
So again, she wasn't the president. Just told the geezer what to do. Behind every good man is a really much better woman.
9527 8 4000 Empress Wu Zetian, the only woman in Chinese history ever to become empress in her own right. Mrs. Gandhi in India and Banda. Here we go. I think people just put these vowels and consonants together just to get me going. Banda Nraniki. Apologies to all my Sri Lankan listeners. Both came to power in elections, but stayed on in dictators. UK has plenty of money. It claims to be the sixth richest nation on the planet. Yes, indeed. 9527 8 4000 for your thoughts on that or anything else. Any other viewpoints that you wish to get across, Alf?
Sorry, I was going to say, because people make these things. We haven't got back to the days on the jobs issue and people are being unemployed. We haven't got back to the volume and the numbers pre-pandemic. And the reality is we had food banks before the pandemic.
Yeah, of course we did.
We had poverty, child poverty, massive in the UK, child poverty. before the pandemic. The pandemic just made everything worse.
Some of it's been with us full stop. It's just one of the things
for a long time. Well, I don't know. See, when I was a kid, I remember when we had school dinners, and they said, "Well, we're not going to embarrass
free
people.
Milk, etc." Which Thatcher,
oh, we all had free
milk.
Yeah,
I know.
We used to have them little triangular things. That was great. During playtime, well, we used to have milk fights. Give away all this free milk, and we used to fight with them in the playground. But the reality was, I remember them going, "Oh, we're not going to embarrass people who can't afford to pay for school dinners. So what we do is we'll give them a little brown envelope." It was almost like the envelopes that the nuns used to drop round your house to put money in for the Roman Catholic
nuns
Church.
Nuns used to come around my place. I'll tell you that much.
Well, no, but. Being from a part, as soon as you had RC anywhere near your name,
oh yeah,
the nuns were round your house, whether you wanted them or not, you got them. But they used to give you a little envelope.
It sounded like it was the craze. Didn't they? You know, you'd see the nuns around your house.
If you saw
coming out the little brown envelopes going.
If you saw the fear in my nan's eyes when the nuns come, when the nuns come to the house, to the door, it was like you'd never do it. My mum come from a Church of England family, but my dad's side were all sort of partly Irish, whatever they were, Roman Catholic. And we moved from Clerkenwell, which is now Islington, to Manor Park, to the country, and within a week, the nuns were at the door. Within a week, they're there with their little ember. But nevertheless, in schools...
There's a Monty Python sketch, isn't there? About nuns.
Obviously. You know. But the one thing they'd said, I'll never forget it, we're not going to embarrass people who can't afford to pay for their school dinners, but what we'll do for them is we'll give everybody a little, and they used to give everybody, every kid, a little brown envelope. On a Monday morning, you'd all come in and you'd give your little brown envelope to the teacher at the front of the class, except for those who went home for home dinners, who lived near. But everybody, and you go, and you couldn't tell the little weeny brown, you couldn't tell the one that had nothing in it from the one that had 2 and 6. You know, half a crown piece in it, which was like miles heavier, and mainly the kids threw them at the teacher.
Right.
So you knew the ones that had money. So of course everybody knew who couldn't afford school dinners. But to be honest, I mean, perhaps it's because it's where I came from, we didn't care. It wasn't a big issue for most of us. It wasn't something that, I mean, I don't know if the kid. I didn't have free school meals, so I didn't know if there was an embarrassment level for the kids that did. But we never took any notice of them. We all stood up in the same line. We all ate the same food, and if you lived too far away anyway, because I lived 3 miles from the school.
Yep.
You had to have a school dinner. It wasn't
952-784-1000. The phone number. I've just run. I've got to put another break in just a second.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. If you want to get involved with Viewpoint, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Let's just check on what the poll is saying. I'm asking today, with the recent events in Turkey, do we think that democracy's days are numbered? 84% say democracy is under threat. 8% say no, and 8% don't know. So
whatever.
Whatever was for the Generation Z's or the Generation Z's.
Okay, I just don't care.
Whatever. What's the Wi-Fi code? 952-784-1000. The phone number, studio@tre.radio, is the email. Just looking at some more comments coming in this morning. Also, every other nation, the European nation, has returned to pre-pandemic wages and benefits. Using the pandemic as an excuse has kind of worn thin. That's one of the comments. It's a sort of get out kind of salve, isn't it? Oh, well, you know, because of, it's the war in Ukraine, or it's something else like that. Are people getting...
We're into... In British politics, it goes in those circles, doesn't it? In those... ever, you know, ever decreasing, ever widening circles, because at the moment it's a 22 million black hole. Whatever is said, that's because we've got a 22 million black hole to fill. And after the virus had sort of, it never has gone away really, but after it naturally declined, for a year, 18 months,
yeah,
the Tories were all, oh, well, that's because we had to cope with the after effects of the pandemic. And it gets to a point where the public go, yeah, we know that, but why aren't we getting out of it? So, you know, we're at the end, I think, of the, we've got a 22 million black hole to fill. Whatever this, and they keep, the Tories try to change, oh, we're going to have an emergency budget. No, we're not. Bongos.
Okay. Indeed, bongos indeed, which means we come to the first half of Viewpoint. National, international news, and then back with more Viewpoints.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint. Welcome back to the second half of Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, joined in the studio by Alf Brew. Just a quick to let you know that St. James's Private Clients are pleased to announce their expansion into Spain, specialised in protecting and preserving global wealth with over 40 years' experience in helping clients enjoy their retirement and lifestyle. For expert financial advice for Spanish tax residents and to maximise retirement income, contact St. James Global Private Clients at info@stjamesglobal.com. St. James Global, protecting your assets and growing your wealth. If you want to get involved with today's show, if there's something crossing your radar that you don't think we're covering and you want us to have a look at it, then it can be anything from global news to, I don't know, your views on the Spanish hay fever season that's going to hit us in a minute. These are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952-78-4000. Email studio@tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And quick look at your headlines as well. The White House is facing calls for investigation after a journalist is accidentally invited to a group chat. Were plans for set out for military strikes on Yemen? The head of domestic violence policing for England and Wales says forces will bring more manslaughter charges against abusers whose partners take their own lives. The Chancellor's announced what she says is the biggest boost in social and affordable housing in a generation. Ahead of tomorrow's spring statement, Rachel Reeves says thousands of new homes will be built in England. Meanwhile, a group of more than 90 airlines are threatening legal action against Heathrow Airport, and the co-ops announced a pledge to price match with Audi for the first time. It says lower members for more than 100 products will be available to its members. Joined in the studio by Alf Brewer. Just a thing here about the housing. Your government is once again trying to kickstart the housing market, and once again we're going to see this whole thing about great. You can bet your bottom euro that tomorrow there'll be something in the mail about greenbelt housing and farmer, you know, and protect or whatever. I mean, do you think we've got enough housing stock? Do you think there's enough housing stock? Do you think with the people are now pledging? Look at the situation in Spain. Do you think people are pledging? Government's doing enough about housing, because social housing is a big issue, especially in Spain. I mean, we've seen the, you know, tourists go home situation and the campaigns which are ramping up for this summer as well. I mean, you've got to say that, you know, social housing was for a long time, it was sort of seen as just another issue. Now it's front and centre, isn't it, for a number of people.
Best thing that's happened for tourism this year, the rain, because at least we ain't going to be put off by having no swimming pools and all the rest of the rubbish that we had last year. It was unbelievable. And it did have an effect on people. Your friends were ringing up saying, God, we're not coming here if you ain't got a swimming pool. We'll go to Turkey or
Well, you're not going to Turkey now, are you? Let's face it.
No, well, who knows? You might go there. As long as you're away from where the rioting is, then it don't matter, does it? Well, I just find the whole thing, as soon as they make the statements... Right, in essence, yeah. And I think Andreas was talking about it last week as well, and I agree with him. The housing issue isn't an issue for the UK. The housing issue is an issue for Europe, because it doesn't matter where you are. Spain have got a problem. And we were talking to our friend who just happens to have an eight-bedroom villa, nothing posh, but it's an eight-bedroom villa in Benalmádena. They've had it for a few years. They bought it as an investment, and so they rent it out for holiday lets, and, of course, the whole thing is, I think they just about make enough money that pays their mortgage and their costs. Right. So they're not making masses of money out of it. And she's... born in Spain, but they lived in England. She's lived in England since she was a young girl. School art lovers and all that. School age lovers. I'll get it right.
Yeah.
And she was saying, you know, they're talking the same way about the effect that the whole thing's had, both in the UK and in Spain, and there's just not enough of the housing. And it got blamed. She was saying, no, it wasn't. And I said, yeah, in Malaga, it was because of Airbnb. And she said, no, it's because of all the rental things. And it's like, no, when it kicked off, it was because Airbnb had done a massive advertising thing in Malaga, and they got loads of these people who had been in rented long-term rental apartments, and they'd got to the owners, and the owners go, right, I want you out because I can do it for Airbnb, and I can make, especially when they were doing it, you know, a three-bedroom house became three lettings at the same time.
Yeah.
And they could see they could make more money from Airbnb than they could out of having it as long-term rentals. And the people who were in long-term rentals were people who'd lived here for 25-plus years. They worked in the restaurants and hotel industry and, you know, catering and stuff like that. So then you're not bringing in your scientists and your doctors and, you know, all your highly... you know, specialised people. These are run-of-the-mill, normal Joe Bloggs workers looking to find affordable accommodation. So when that disappears, it's like, well, so where do we go? Oh, so now, instead of living in Malaga City, we've now got to move to Benalmádena or Mias or, you know, certainly up, you know, up the coast, Lakala, even as far in as the was it the eastern edge of Marbella? Obviously, yeah. They couldn't afford Marbella, but the eastern edge.
You know, down, to be fair, to afford Marbella.
Huh?
I mean, Marbella's got lots of
sort of region areas that you'd be able to live in.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Miraflores,
but then they've got all the costs of travelling, especially when the train stops at Fuengirola and don't go anywhere.
It doesn't even go there, yeah.
No, it doesn't even go there.
Exactly,
does it?
Yeah.
So you've got all these people that have tried, and the same applies to right across Europe by the sounds of it. And it's because, for some reason, the investment went out of it. So it's called private investment. It's not national investment. Of course, your national organisation should be there. And they're the ones who make it possible, i.e. they do the planning stuff. So freeing up the planning, stopping local people from saying, you can't build here. And, yes, I've heard all that, you know, the farmers. There is more land, as I understand it, there's more land, farming land, been removed from farming to grow trees than there will be or has been for building houses, because we've also got that same thing about, you know, let's help the environment. So they're planting something like 1 million trees a year in the UK, and you go, so where do they plant them? They don't plant them down every side street. These are proper trees. They're trees that will come into fruition. They turn into forests. Forests create things and vegetation and whatever. So you're losing loads of land to that. And then someone comes along and says, oh, you can't build those houses here. I remember when it was at Stansted Airport and they decided not to build I think it was the second runway at Stansted. And at the end of Stansted Airport, on towards the west of the airport, there's a massive, massive tract of land. Because if they'd have had two runways,
right,
you need that open space for the planes to come in and take off.
Obviously, yeah.
Obvious.
Kind of helps with an airport, Alf, doesn't it?
Yeah, but at Stansted, you see, they were coming in, they were landing from the east. So they were going to turn the airport round so it would become a west
facing.
So no, it's already west facing. That's why they land from the east. So the airport faces towards the inside of the UK. So they had this massive, massive, and I mean huge lump of land. Next to it was a forest. My union's training college was there, so we used to go there quite regular. And they said, right, well, this land is now redesignated, and we're going to build an housing estate. And the housing estates they're talking about are massive, huge, great big housing estates. And everybody was up in arms. This is Bishop Stortford. Sounds posh, doesn't it?
Hello.
So that's where Stansted Airport is, the end of Bishop Stortford. Great big.
Very good friend of mine was a stewardess, and therefore she used to base herself in Bristol.
Yeah. And then they said, oh, you can't build there. Because it's not residential land, it's brownfield.
Yeah.
Why is it brownfield? You ain't got nothing on it. It's stubble, grass. You know, they don't even let the animals wander around on it. It's just a lump of land that's left there. And it can't be overgrown. They can't grow trees. So every now and again they go in there with the cutters and whatever, cut it all down. And you go, so what was it? What is all that? You're not going to build the second runway. They've already decided they're not going to build the second runway, and it's never going to be built in my lifetime. So you might as well let them build the houses there, and then you redevelop the airport in a different way, if necessary. Remembering at the same time you're going to add to Gatwick, which was the argument, the second runway at Gatwick, and you might do something extra at Luton, not another runway, but in order to take more capacity, and you're going to have the third runway at London Airport. Why do you need a second runway at Stansted? And the answer is no. But they wouldn't let the land, they wouldn't free the land up, because it's brownfield. So you have to redesignate it as being residential. And it's called, what a pile of nonsense. Now, if the new planning regulations are going to change that, and someone's going to come in and say, you're not going to have a 25-year, oh, let's investigate what's really going to happen with this land, and someone comes along and says, no, that's building land, we're going to build on it, never mind about your designation that you've called it brownfield or whatever, we'll change it. So they've reinvented this new one. Is it called Greyland, I think it's called?
No
now.
Idea.
So there's greenfield, obviously. There's brownfield, which is industrial, and there's residential. And now they've added this other one, which is Greyland, I think it's called, which is redesignated either residential but mainly industrial land, so you can build houses on it. And if they're going to do that all over the UK, get rid of all these, you know, I can't tell you, when they knocked all the factory places down in Essex from the old factory industrial estates, they're not factories down, they sit there, they're just concrete bases in the floor.
The problem is, I mean, because I was, believe it or not, in a previous life, I was the editor of the British Urban Regeneration Association book, and the problem with that is because of the, you know, every factory is built in the 30s, 40s, 50s and 60s, of course, asbestos, other turning things. So, you know, it would take...
But once they're knocked down...
They're still...
Once they're knocked down, they're concrete, but I used to deal with asbestos all the time. Listen, O2 was built on the biggest asbestos site, probably in Britain, and chemicals. That used to be where the cleaning companies had all their chemical places. They had to take about 8 foot of dirt off the top of that before they could even start contemplating putting the foundations in. You look at it now, the Greenwich Peninsula. I mean, when I was working there, they was, you know, the leader of Greenwich Council was saying to me, the people in Greenwich won't have to pay council tax if they did it right. They wouldn't have to pay council tax ever again. That's how much money was generated from the Greenwich Peninsula, because it was all polluted land, and because they wanted the O2, and because they wanted all that, they had to depollute it. So if they can do it there, why can't they do it? So I understand what you're saying about the factory sites and there being but you don't get asbestos in a concrete foundation of a factory that's been knocked down already.
9529840000 Greyfield, not Greyland. Greyfield land refers to underused or diffused land and disused land where buildings, often including car parks, rooftops and empty shopping centres, while brownfield land is previously developed land that is currently unused. UK government approves new Thames Crossing project in southeast England, apparently. That's quite a thing. Here we go, here's some more bits.
Another new bridge that won't be built.
Good morning to Christine. Good morning to Christine. It says, as I stand, this is I love the image here, okay? I like people who stand. He's paint a picture for me, yeah? As I stand here in my wellies and wetsuit, steady, it might be a good time to discuss where our esteemed Spanish government is going to find $58 billion to replumb Spain. Pimlico plumbers possibly won't hack it.
Marbella plumbers, don't...
No, just generally.
He changed Pimlico plumbers.
What I'm saying is, yeah, I mean, where are they going to find $85 billion to replumb Spain? I mean, yes. When it rains... Actually, there wasn't... I mean, you're down that indicator. It wasn't, obviously, since the horrendous events of October with the Dana hitting Valencia and, you know, the fact that they'd done... this area of Spain was pretty much... They were cleaning out their... You know, they were making sure that when it did rain, it didn't get too bad, but it just seems that every time you get a bit of rain, we've got
pennies from heaven, by the way.
Pennies from heaven. What was that?
When it rains, it always rains. Pennies from heaven.
Thank you. Yes, very good. Okay, indeed.
Sorry about that. It also only ever rains on the plain. I don't know. I think they were talking about the planes at Malaga Airport.
Right. Replumb Spain easy. People who pay the bills. Thank you very much for.
Well, I live on an estate which is, technically was. So La Capilania was one of the oldest estates built in the early 60s. Might have been late 50s even. Yeah. But it's where all the British who were escaping from the UK, not because they didn't like the weather, but because it was safer to be away from the police in Spain. Right. No extradition treaty then. But nevertheless, next door in the middle of it is where I live, a different estate. But evidently, just before I bought my property, and I didn't know this when I was buying, they had no sewage. They had no proper sewage down the whole estate.
Yeah, yeah. So the Lager has that as well up on the estate.
And also, most of the plumbing was with iron pipes, not copper pipes or polythene. Polythene hadn't been invented. So they were iron pipes. So after a while, even though they're underground, they rot and they rust and they leak.
Yeah.
So the first thing is that the estate that I'm on, the residents, obviously, the urbanisation, paid to have the sewers put in. So down our road is, you know, great big, where they never tarmac it properly afterwards, from top to bottom, and they put in a, whatever it is, a 40-inch or 50-inch pipe, sewage pipe, all the way down through the estate.
Right.
The second thing was we used to have well water, so all the urbanisations provided their own water. I mean, they didn't. We had wells up in the mountains and whatever the water company provided, whatever got it to our estate, but it was our water and we paid next to nothing for water. So then what came along is they said, the Spanish government said, you're polluting the Mediterranean because you are pumping the water out from the mountains, not purifying it properly, and effectively you were pumping too much arsenic into the Mediterranean. So they then changed it and created all these new water companies. Some have argued against it, but the new water companies is an amalgam between private enterprise, private investment, and the local council. So ours was the private lump was Akasol. Obviously, the local council, Ben El Madna, and they created this thing called Emabesa.
Right.
And they're all ex-councillors who run the damn thing. All the councillors who can't hold their seats and lose their jobs get found jobs somewhere because that's the Spanish political scene.
Allegedly.
Well, no, the guy who ran for mayor, who lost the election and lost his seat, ended up being a, I don't know, he's like the chief PR man for Emma Besser. Anyway, they come along and they go, right, we're going to do all this. So they then, because of the amount of water that was being lost through leaks, and so I can understand what that woman's saying about the welly boots. We live on the side of a mountain, so we don't get all the puddles and that, because it just goes straight down and wasted into the sea. But they decided to have all the news. So Emma Besser were tasked with this job, and they came in and they stripped out, you know, loads of the pipework, you know, PVC piping, new water meters, etc., etc. Our water quadrupled in price, and now is five times higher.
Yeah.
And our IBI, the local council tax, was raised because other urbanisations had to do the same. So effectively, she's right. You know, whoever it is, we end up paying for somebody else's mistakes. And that's the way of the world, though, isn't it? That's what's always going to happen. Somebody finds something wrong, who's going to pay? Well, Joe Public. There's nobody else left to pay, is there? You're not going to get, oh, what we'll do is we'll get some private water company in and they can do all the stuff. And then what they'll do is they'll get the profit from selling the water over the next 50 years or 100 years, whatever it is. Oh, no. Because they've got their shareholders to think of. And you go, but it's not a private company. Half of the company is owned by the local council, so it's us anyway. So are we getting our share of the profits to come back so that our IBI is reduced? Oh, no, the IBI goes up every year, you know, as everything goes up by whatever. So you're in this never-ending circle of not despair, but you just chuck your hands up in the air and say, well, who's going to pay? Well, who's going to pay is going to be the Spanish public.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be the Spanish government who's going to say to the Spanish public, you've all got to pay 10 euros a month for tax in order to pay for this. They will wheedle around like almost every government on the planet does and come up with some strangely worded solution that effectively means the people have got to pay to have all this done. And I don't know. The bigger question is, how long is it going to take them to repipe Spain?
Mm.
Because if what our estate's anything to go by, thousands of others have still got iron pipes.
952 78 4000. We're going to the poll. I'm asking the question, do we think that democracy is under threat? Thousands being arrested overnight over the past couple of days, even in Turkey. Currently 86% say yes, democracy is under threat. 7% say no. 7% don't know. Turkey hasn't been a democracy for about a decade, says Sammy. Michael Bryant says, I totally agree with Sammy's comment. Turkey has not been a democracy for about a decade. If you want to get involved with the show, these are the numbers.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
And from Christine, who brought up the original thing about plumbing, she says, gosh, Alf, you got the job.
Thank you. As long as you don't expect me to buy copper, because that's probably one of the most expensive commodities on the planet.
Absolutely,
at the
if you look at people. Anyway, 952 78 4000 is the phone number. Take a quick break and then back with more Viewpoint.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Always live, always lively. Viewpoint brought to you in association with St. James Global Private Clients, who are expanding into Spain, specialising in protecting and preserving global wealth with over 40 years' experience in helping clients enjoy their retirement and lifestyle. If you have protected your investments against wealth, capital gains or inheritance tax, you may want to talk to or go to St. James Global Private Clients. Contact to financial advice and to maximise retirement income. Go to info@stjamesglobal.com. St. James Global, protecting your assets and growing your wealth.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
Yeah, on the poll, Turkey, of course, the is democracy under threat? 86% yes, 7% no, 7% don't know.
So,
yeah,
for people who question, I'll put it mildly, question whether Turkey is a democracy or not, unfortunately, it's not up to you guys to decide what democracy looks like or what is classed as, because in order to join the European Union, you must be able to show that you are a democratic country, which is why, you know, Franco's demise then becomes democratic Spain with elections, etc. And around, so in order to join the EU, you must, on first look, be a democracy. And Turkey have not changed their position on wanting to join the EU. The EU may have, you know, a long hands, arms reach, and they may have sort of not allowed them to join for many, many years, but that doesn't stop Turkey wishing to join the EU. And the EU have never questioned Turkey's level of democracy, as much as we may not think it's great. Theirs has always been their human rights issues.
Yeah, I mean, but also,
which is different. So Turkey is a democratic country.
But you look at what, you know, the way that they go against the PKK, which is the Kurdish organization.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But every country in the Middle East has gone against. I've told you this many times. The Kurds were the biggest tribal nation in the Middle East, and they operate in Iraq, Iran, in Turkey, in Lebanon. Yeah, you name all. Almost all of the Middle East countries have some Kurdish intake. The biggest number of people who have been killed in conflict in the Middle East are the Kurds. They're killed by the Turks, they're killed by the Iraqis, they're killed by the Iranians, they're killed by the Lebanese, they're killed by the Syrians. They've been killed over the centuries. They still survive and they still exist. The problem is, after whatever, what was it, the First World War, or was it before the First World War, when those European countries got together and they drew the lines on the map, you know, Italy, France, Britain, Germany, Spain. They drew the lines.
What are we talking about here? Sorry.
In Africa, Africa. Yeah. So they drew a load of lines. There was no land called Kurdistan. Kurdistan doesn't exist, even though they're the biggest populated tribal nation in the Middle East. They don't have their own land. So now you wonder why, you know, and of course Turkey will hate the PKK because
back to your sewage, you're plowing, aren't you? Obviously, it's going to say they bought us great pies in the Kurds, lemon curd.
But the Kurds have always been the dumb by people throughout history, and everybody wants them out of the way because they're a threat. Because they're always demanding some rights for themselves. So the Kurds in Turkey wanted an area of Turkey to be their own. Stop laughing.
I'm sorry, but
it was one slip of the tongue.
Yeah, I know it's one slip of the tongue. But it's just, you know, that's better than Jeremy Hunt.
Yeah, but getting back to the... So you can say what you like about the democracy. What you like about the democracy of Turkey.
Yes.
But in all seriousness, the EU treat them as a democratic organisation.
Right, so...
You know, you can run it down for what you don't think, but how many other democracies in Europe are there that are questionable?
Right, then let's go to some of the other WhatsApps coming in. The Iran did not kill Kurds. In fact, many government are Kurds. Also, they're not the largest tribe in the Middle East. Meanwhile, France and GB, Sykes-Picot Treaty drew the lines. Turkey don't need the EU. And in other news, the elephant in the room, by the way, is always Brexit. That's where the country hasn't recovered. It's 22 million black hole to fix. And by the way, why aren't the billionaires and energy companies being taxed instead of the soft targets? Going wide here. Most Britons think that they are in austerity. Which of the following comes closest to your government policy of government policy of austerity. What's your view? 36% between the 18 and 24 year olds, 65-74, 10%. Right to the lines we go. Morning, Cooley, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling? What's your viewpoint, please?
It's Gil from Calpe.
Morning, Gil.
Morning. I want to correct Alf on one thing. He said that Turkey is a democracy, I understand. Well, it's certainly not a democracy because Erdogan sends all his opposition to prison and all the reporters, the people of the press who criticize him. I mean, that's not a democracy. Absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, they have more reporters in prison than any country in the world.
I mean, look how Trump was staying silent on his social media. He had more worries about a portrait that made him look chubby, and yeah. Sakir Starmer was pretty quiet about it as well. And you could argue it's because they need, you know, this Churchill would have called this a soft underbelly of Europe. They need Turkey and you know to be on their side.
But again, I never said that I thought that Turkey was a democracy. What I said is that. What we class as democratic,
right.
I would question whether Turkey is a democracy.
Okay.
But the EU accepts, the European Union have accepted Turkey in order for them to apply for membership. And it's never, whoever it was who messages in and says Turkey doesn't need the EU, it's not about whether they need it or not. Turkey applied to join the EU. They've never rescinded that application, and it's still on the books. And if you look at the European Union's memoranda that go through, it's like Hansard. So every time it's mentioned, it's written down somewhere. Turkey has never gone away from seeking membership of the European Union.
The first point
is you have to be a notified democracy. Now, you may not like it, and I may not like it, but the European Union say you're democratic enough. They don't get entry because of their human rights issue, which is what Giles was alluding to with the PKK and many others, and the Kurds. And I don't know who it is who said. I mean, I used to work for the MP, a British Labour Party MP, who did massive amounts with the Kurds. And I can assure you, the problem is, where they're Turkish Kurds, Iranian Kurds, Iraqi Kurds, and Iran never killed Kurds, did they not? You ask what happened with the Kurds during the Iran-Iraq war. The Syrians never killed Kurds. You name it. Every country has killed. But they don't class them as one tribe. And before they drew the lines in North Africa...
Yes. But
it was the biggest tribe, and still is.
Yes, I want to comment there. The Kurdish are a nation, and the reason why they don't have a state of their own is just after you mentioned the fact of World War One and the negotiations afterwards, when the whole world was negotiating in Britain and in France and sending representatives, you know, to draw the Middle East, the Kurds didn't. They didn't send any representative because they were quarrelling amongst themselves, which has always been the case. I mean, they could. I mean, at the time when, for instance, the Zionist movement was sending people to the, you know, San Remo conference and to Versailles and so on, and trying to lobby every government, but mainly the British and the French who ruled the Middle East. The Kurds did nothing, and that's the reason why they don't have a state till this very day. Yeah. Nevertheless, the Kurds are, by the way, a nation in all definitions, because first they have their own language, which they speak and nobody else does. They have their own geographical area, which is a continuous and well-defined, where most of them live and not many other people live, although they don't have a state of their own. And they also have history, because Saladin was a Kurd, and that was 800 years ago, so they've been there a long time, yeah? On the other hand, you know, when you compare that, for instance, to the Palestinians or any other Arab group, the Arabs are not divided into nations. None of them are nations. All of the countries there are artificial countries, you know, created by the colonial powers, mainly Britain and France. In North Africa, you can add Spain and Italy. They're completely artificial countries. I mean, in the Arab world, they have religions, not denominations, tribes, ethnicities, but they don't have nations.
The one thing the Kurds had, that not many others had, is that the MP I worked for, his name was John Austin Walker. He dropped the Walker. His name was John Austin. He was the MP originally for Woolwich. Then it became Woolwich and Eltham when they did the boundary changes. Mm-hmm. And he was a regular. He would go to wherever in the Middle East 4 or 5 times a year. He would come back and report to Parliament. He would report to the Foreign Committee and all of the rest of it. So they had, rarely, they did have a spokesman in Parliament, and they had a committee. There was a committee set up that only dealt with the issue of the Kurds. And you're right. This is what people, you know, unlike you, Gil, historic wise, you know it all, and quite rightly. But they weren't a tribe that were together. They were a nomadic tribes collectively, which is why when they come to after the war, they couldn't find a leader to speak for them, because there was too many leaders, and they would all fight each other.
That's right,
So they get ignored. But from a Western civilised perspective, after drawing the lines in Africa and seeing, you know, the problems that would occur, you would have thought that somebody, I mean, everybody knows, if they'd have done it in one hit, Kurdistan would be the biggest country in North Africa. Massive.
No, Kurdistan is in Asia.
Well, effectively, but it's still the Middle East lump, wherever it's...
But they're entirely in Asia.
Well, they might be, but is Iraq in Asia, or is
a Middle East lump, anyway, that's all right.
Most of the Middle East is in Asia. Only Egypt is in Africa, and Cyprus is in Europe.
Right.
And part of Turkey, small part of Turkey, if you consider it Middle East.
Yes, and that's why most of us failed our history things. Yes, indeed. Thanks very much for the call in.
Yeah, okay.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. Looking at some of the some more bits and pieces coming in. Any kids listen to the show, they won't pass any history exams. All right. Charlie Mullins, the man who sold his business for £145 million in 2021, divested all of his UK assets and directed his investments to Spain and Dubai. The man who said he would leave the UK if Labour won the election, even though the Labour budget didn't affect him. He's still on his Dinah Rod Stewart. Oh, genius. Not Rod Stewart, Dinah Rod Stewart. Love it. Farewell to her in the UK. Frequenting certain TV and radio stations, joining Reform UK, and moaning in right-wing papers. Oh, my goodness. Best to talk about a subject you know. Thank you very much. Right, when are the Kurds being in North Africa? Anyway, moving swiftly onwards. Let's talk in a minute. Let's have a look at the poll, shall we? Why not? Looking at the poll, which says the following things. But that's going to get me in all sorts of trouble. So the poll at the moment stands at, do I think, because of what's been happening in Turkey over the past week or so, and other authoritarian and shenanigans, do we think that democracy is under threat? Yes, 89% think yes, 6% say no, and 5% don't know. My thanks to Ashley, who sent me in this absolute blinder on the back of the Donald Trump, the person being invited into the group chat. Yeah. So this is a supposed group chat. Stag, what's the latest on the weather? This is during the Second World War. The weather looks good for June the 6th. Oh, mark that as D-Day or for Operation Overlord. Got it, everybody? This is Montgomery, confirmed the British. Tedder here, confirmed the air. Lee Mallory, same. Ramsey, confirmed for Neptune. Absolutely love it. That's absolute genius. You can see the Second World War generals on Schaeff on a Facebook group or on a WhatsApp group. 952-78-4000. Going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to the last 10 minutes of this morning's viewpoint.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
And thanks to St. Jones Global for the sponsorship of this show. Don't forget they are specialists in protecting and preserving global wealth. If for expert financial advice for Spanish tax residents and to maximise retirement income, contact St. James Global Private Clients at info@stjamesglobal.com. St. James Global, protecting your assets and growing your wealth. Thank you to Andrea, who sent me this, and she's listening in France. She said, if you feel insecure at work today, just remember that Trump's Secretary of Defense texted a top secret military info to the press in a group chat. If an army private had accidentally texted the details of a classified military operation to a reporter, let alone transmitted to any classified information to anyone who was unauthorized over an unsecured device, they'd be immediately charged and likely spend time in Leavenworth, which is, of course, the American military prison. But it's Pete Hegseth, just the Secretary of Defense, so he probably won't be charged. Yeah.
Well, probably,
have you ever,
I think that's where you allow the privilege of disability functions, so if the guy's disabled, they'd probably let him off. Well, the guy has obviously got some mental bloody problem that he sticks it out, if he did.
Well, we've all said
that. And they had that guy, was it Hegseth who was on the telly last night?
Jody Vance, probably.
And he said, no, it's
saying that Denmark's not a very good ally when 63...
He said, no military secrets were texted. That's what no texts were sent about the war stuff. And it's like, what? What are you talking about? Unbelievable. Anyway, one of the issues, it always, when we come to how do you tax, stop taxing the poor and all the rest of it, is setting aside the poor, it's like, stop taxing ordinary folk and start hitting the wealthy and the big companies. And of course, the problem always when you go to that level is that the people with money have the money and the ability to avoid paying the tax. You know, nobody's going to tell me, as I understand, let's go, not the plumbing man, he's one of, but how many well-known pop stars, you know, they never spend more than, you know, a month in a country, and they're off to the next country. And even though they say, you know, Elton John, I live in Australia, so why'd you spend all this time in the UK, in Europe, in America, and whatever? Because their accountants will tell them, you know, in order to avoid paying taxes is what you do. So when you say, oh, let's go after the most wealthy, the billionaires, they're the ones who are easier to avoid paying the extra than anybody else who can't escape from the country. Secondly, when you go for the big companies, these big companies are not stupid. You know, the simple example is Amazon. You know, Amazon's go, oh, it's this, that, and the other. We'll move our operation to Southern Ireland. And they do a deal with the government in Southern Ireland, and they don't pay as much tax. And then you go, oh, well, we'll have a new law now that says, you know, whatever money you earn in this country is where you pay your tax. So these big companies then change, you know, whatever they're doing in order to avoid. So the only way the country digs itself out of raising money is to go back to the organisations that can't escape. And the organisations that can't escape will always be poorer than the ones who can escape. So it's natural. What I don't agree with is you attack the most vulnerable in society. So anybody who's got a disability who can't work, we should be looking after them. End of story. 100%. And throughout the centuries, we've been doing this. How many times do you know, going back in history and you go, oh, it's the scroungers. It's always the scrounger who's on the front page of the Sunday People, who's on holiday in Tenerife while he's claiming unemployment benefits. And you go, you know, that's 0.1% of the population of the UK. The amount of people who are on benefits originally, I'm talking about when I was at my height of union stuff, so in the late 60s through to the 80s, less than 2% of the population of the UK were scrounging off of benefits. You can't then spend 5% of your wealth trying to capture 2% of the scroungers. You know, it doesn't make financial sense. So after it was easy to employ the inspectors because they were cheap, then they become more expensive, then they become civil servants, then they have all the overheads that go with it. So what you do is you say, right, we're now going to issue it as it's a threat. Probably an idle threat. It's more about stopping people from doing something by fear rather than actually stopping them doing something. So you lost all the inspectors. So all those, there used to be thousands of benefit inspectors. People used to cringe in the doorways, but that's when everybody lived in private rented accommodation, you know, four or five families to a property. Yeah. The tally man. Everybody remember the tally man? Tally man.
Tally man banana.
Yeah, on the knock.
They're like, come on, we want to go home.
Well, that's where it comes from. The tally man on the knock.
A beautiful bunch of ripe bananas.
Well, you pay for everything. Yeah, the guy used to come to the door and you paid $2 a week to buy something.
Right. Okay.
You don't remember that?
No.
No, well, in the days, in the 50s and 60s, and we're not talking about 62, in the 50s and 60s up to the 70s,
right.
you had people come round the door, knock on the door and say, you borrowed £5, where's your money for this week? They weren't thugs, they weren't gangs, they were called the tally man.
Okay.
And they tallied up how much money that you paid, and then they told you when you'd paid your debt off. Everybody.
Payday, so this would be today known as a payday loan.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
But in them days, they sent someone round your door because it was cheaper.
Nuns, normally.
Nuns. Don't mention the nuns.
Nuns, you know.
So especially the flying nuns.
Especially the flying nuns. Right then. But thank you for the Republican who sent me a picture of Britain's biggest benefit scratch, a picture of our king. How dare you, sir? And he looks particularly outstanding there in his RAF uniform. Thank you, Gary. For a man who's not listening to my show, you sent me an awful lot today. Meanwhile, the poll of polls at the moment, do we think democracy is under threat? 89% say yes, 6% say no, and 5% say they don't know. If you want to get your final into the hat.
To contact TRE, please call 952 78 4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95. Message us on Facebook, Talk Radio Europe Official, or tweet us at TRE Talk Radio.
952 78 4000. Everyone's a critic. Right then, looking at some of the other bits and pieces that have been coming in the show. into the show. 952 78 4000 is the phone number. Just looking at some of the comments coming in at the moment. And just seeing what else is coming up. Gosh, Tesla saw a 40% plunge in sales across Europe last month. Excuse me. Figures show there was a rise in overall new electric. What?
Ha ha.
Well, I can't imagine.
Serves him right.
The figure lagged bits. Well, I mean, they sold less than 17,000 across Europe compared to 48,000 during the same month in 2024, raising questions about some of the extent drivers are being put off by boss Elon Musk politics. Because, I mean, the Tesla used to be apparently in the States, it was the Hollywood elites who were driving Teslas because it was good for the planet. And your mag fan is a fan of a big Ford pickup truck.
Well, everybody who talks about, I mean, I'm not into cars, but everybody who talks about said the Tesla is the best, the greatest electric car ever built. And he's done it. And you just go, yeah, well, perhaps you shouldn't have taken the chain cutter to overseas aid.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way, mildly.
Thank you very much. Teslas are, yes, they're not very good, but it rhymes with Hittite, what the person has written.
Ain't that an African?
No, it's not an African. It's Mesopotamia.
Tribe. I was thinking of a tribe.
African tribes.
It's a tribe, isn't it?
Yeah, no, Hittites are a civilization. Mesopotamia, etc.
I was thinking of the ones that were closer to sewage.
Which, in some quarters, this entire show has been. Right then, almost out of time. But, like the proverbial of the proverbial's proverbial, do we, you know, as Mill would say, nobody likes us and we don't care. Any final thoughts on this? And this has been a wide-ranging subject, Alvin. The time has flown by, which is obviously the mark of a good show. Even though some people are using this show to keep apparently to keep the blackbirds off the blackberries or something like that, apparently, to scare them.
Well, I think, from my perspective, like I say, I don't.
I like the idea of my voice keeping birds off people's blackberries.
Well, I don't profess to be
a. You put a picture of Peter the plumber, and that would Paul the plumber, maybe somebody else.
I don't profess to be an expert in anything. I just listen to things and regurgitate most of it. So, for somebody who says, "Oh, no, we don't use," tell the radio again, 385,000 barrels of oil a day is what Spain takes in from Venezuela.
Right,
according to whatever talk. What's your talk radio news? It's Sky News, isn't it? You use
IRN. Yeah, IRN Sky News, but yeah, there you go. Anyway, almost that time. It has been a pleasure and a privilege to bring you today's show. Any and final thoughts, Alf?
And for me.
And for you too.
And it's summer. The sun's out.
The sun's out, yeah, but it's only Tuesday. It's nothing to do with me. Hay fever all around. The final with the poll today, not the poll of polls, is democracy under threat after Turkey, etc. And, we think that 89% say yes, democracy is under threat, 6% say no, and 5% don't know. I will be back with this show repeated at 7 o'clock. Stephen Ritson's up next.
Opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.